Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome back to this week's episode of Secondary Accounts. I am your host. My name is Meredith. And I guess before we get started, thank you guys for waiting a week. Thank you for being patient. I survived my wedding, but most importantly, I survived my honeymoon. So I'm wanting to get out like an extra bonus episode either like this week or something. And do a little story time about my honeymoon because it was not, not a good experience for either me or my husband. And it's just kind of like a fun story to look back on. We are really grateful that we are safe and everything, but the story is quite entertaining and I don't know, it's just something that I'll want to be able to look back on and to remember and be like, oh my gosh, we were so young and so lucky that nothing worse happened to us. So keep a lookout for that. I know it's like kind of not in the vibes of my podcast because, you know, I like true crime and we're gonna be talking about true crime today, but I feel like we can make an exception. And I don't know, it'll give you like a little closer eye on my relationship with my husband and also just figuring out who I am too, because, you know, not all of you know me, which is fine. I don't know, I guess enough rambling about the bonus episode for later this week. The wedding was wonderful. It was such a beautiful, hot day. Oh my gosh, don't get married in the summer if you live in Arizona or any desert. Please don't. I did not want to get married in the summer. So why did I, you ask? Well, my summer plans fell through, Brandon's summer plans fell through, and we're like, bruh, what's the point? Why wait? So we just decided to get married a couple months sooner, which worked out fine. Literally, our wedding day was just perfect. And I'm so very grateful to everybody who helped, and I don't know, I'm still so happy. And now, yeah, I started my big girl job, and I love it. It's wonderful for me. I'm loving my coworkers and just having this new experience and to be able to learn and getting out of my comfort zone because I hate asking questions. I hate being new at something because I just feel like I'm being judged with every little thing, but I'm not. I'm new. I'm training. They expect me to ask questions, you know, all that loveliness. And also moving, that's kind of a pain. I've never moved before, so moving in to our new place is, I don't know, like, it's fine. It's nice being able to organize and decorate it the way that I want it to be and also what Brandon wants it to be because it's our house, so it'll be a mixture of both of our styles. Yeah, that's about it for catching up. And now, I just want to tell you a story. But first, we're going to do a warning. So this episode contains graphic descriptions that may be disturbing to some listeners. So listener discretion is advised. If you have small children, I don't know. It's all up to you. You parent how you want to parent. Not my children, not my rules. Just keep an eye out for what is best for them. And I will give a warning right before I give these graphic descriptions. Thank you guys so much, and let's begin. So, when you go to the woods, have you ever felt a pair of eyes on you? But then you turn around and nothing is there. So you decide to keep going, but that eerie feeling remains. Eventually you make it home and you think you're safe, but the newspaper on your table looks off. You can't remember when you had the time to pick it up. And footsteps roam above you in the attic, and you freeze. Someone is in your house, but who? Today's case is unsolved, includes footprints in the snow, an intruder, and headless corpses. Before World War II stood the Hinterkaifeck farm in Germany. This farmstead was near the woods and was a half mile from the town of Kaifek. Victoria Gabriel lived with her two children. So, you know, I don't speak German. I don't know why I keep picking these foreign cases because I keep mispronouncing names. So, please forgive me. But anyhow, so Victoria Gabriel lived with her two children. Their names were Cecilia and Joseph, or Yosef. Victoria's parents, I think she lived with them, actually, and they were elderly and, you know, it's just they were nice to let their daughter stay with them because she was a widow and she had two children. So obviously, you know, it would be easier to live with some more people for that extra help. The parents' names were Andreas and Cecilia Gruber, or Grubar. Gruber? Let's go with Gruber. Victoria's husband, his name was Carl Gabriel. He died during the First World War in France. Victoria and Carl had their eldest child, Cecilia, together. However, Josef came long after Carl had passed away, and the true identity of Josef's father is unknown, but I will go over the theories later in this episode. Now, this family didn't socialize much, besides Victoria participating in the church choir and Victoria and Carl's daughter, Cecilia, going to school, like, you know, how every child should. And even though they kept to themselves the majority of the time, their neighbors knew when something was off. Days before the last sighting of the family, Andreas told his neighbors how some weird things were happening, such as a newspaper showing up in his home, knowing that nobody in the house had bought it, knowing that he didn't buy it. A set of keys also went missing, and the strangest of all, being footprints in the snow, led in one direction, the Hinterkaifeck barn household. Adding on to the strange occurrences at the farm, the former maid shared with the police that the property was haunted. She worked there long enough that constantly hearing something in the attic, similar to footsteps, and feeling a set of eyes on her, got to be too much. You know, that would be too much for me. I'd be like, yeah, something's off. I don't feel comfortable. The vibes are off. So, yeah. And when she would make note of her beliefs, Andreas shrugged it off. He's like, whatever, you're just crazy. Get over it. You know? And a lot of people tend to do that when it comes to hauntings or these beliefs that, oh, we're not alone. But people tend to want to believe that their homestead is safe because home is supposed to be a wonderful, safe place for everybody who comes in and who comes out. Just the idea of not being safe in your own home, that's scary. And this story really, like, it just makes that known to me. Like, somebody was there and you just need to trust your gut. Granted, having anxiety, trusting your gut is really difficult because constantly it's like, oh, you need to run away. This isn't safe. That's not a safe place. But then when it comes to it actually not being a safe place, how can you tell the difference? But I don't know. I've never been in this kind of situation, so I don't know. And that's just scary to think of somebody entering my house without permission and me not knowing that they live there. It kind of reminds me, have you guys seen the movie The Boy? It's about like this nanny, and then she takes up this job in England and she has to nanny for this boy, for this rich elderly couple. And when she meets the boy, the child that she is there to nanny, it's a puppet. And she's like, what the crap? Is this some kind of joke? You know, I would think it was a joke too. But then, you know, stuff happens. And Spoiler alert, if you haven't seen the movie, skip ahead 15, 30 seconds. But if you don't care, I'm going to spoil it for you. So the boy, the puppet, was based off of this boy named Brom. I think that's his name. I haven't seen the movie in a little bit, so forgive me if I'm wrong. And so Brom supposedly died in a house fire, and mysteriously this puppet showed up. But in reality, Brom did not die. He was just living on the inside of the walls and everything, and he was like haunting his family house. And at the end of the movie, the nanny lady finds Brom and she has to escape. And just finding out that he was there inside the house, it also reminds me of When a Stranger Calls. Yeah, I don't know. I like spooky things. That's why I started this podcast. And yeah, if you like those spooky movies, let me know. But anywho, back to Andreas shrugging off the previous maid's beliefs that their property was haunted. In one of the articles I read to prepare for this episode, even mentioned how one of the neighbors Andreas confided in offered to lend him a gun, just in case. Andreas thanked the neighbor for the offer, but he declined. I don't know what the rules were like back in 1922, specifically in Germany, in this small town, but I grew up in America. You all know there are guns everywhere. And just thinking like somebody declining an offer for a gun is just, I don't know, in America, that's like, bruh, why don't you have a gun to protect your family and all of that? But we're not going to discuss guns in this episode. You know, you guys can hear my opinions elsewhere, but not today. And so it's just like thinking, if he had the gun, maybe this wouldn't have happened. And what happened, you may ask? Keep listening. But I'm going to make you wait a little bit. So on April 4th of 1922, the family's neighbors decided it was time to search for the Gruber family. The daughter Cecilia missed school on the 1st and on the 3rd, along with the post office confirming that their mail continued to pile up. Everybody was like, oh, it's time to look. So Lorenz Schlittenbar, I'm not cursing, it's his last name, the neighbor who led the search party, that's a name that you'll want to remember for later. That just reminded me of that meme of Mickey Mouse where it's like, oh, that is a tool that we will use for later. So yeah, that's where my mind goes to try and keep this kind of light so it's not as heavy, but it is still heavy, don't get me wrong. But anywho, the search party began in the barn. Grandpa Andreas, Grandma Cecilia, and the younger Cecilia, as well as Victoria, were found covered by hay. Little Josef and the new maid, Maria Baumgartner, again, I apologize, were also covered. Josef was covered by one of his mother's dresses, and Maria was covered by her bed sheets. So now let's talk about the science behind the coverings. So typically, killers cover their victims out of remorse or guilt, or sometimes in other cases because they had some kind of an attachment or connection, whether it be emotional or sexual connections. And so this kind of adds on to one of the theories that we're gonna talk about later, because who would just cover their victims like this? Granted, I don't know, there could be several different reasons for this, but again, in a little bit we'll talk about it. I just want to give you all the information first, and then the theories, because I want you guys to be able to form your own theories instead of interrupting half of the story by being like, yeah, this is what I think is happening, you know? But here I am interrupting in the middle of the story, telling you to remember this part, okay? Remember the coverings and remember the science behind it. And ignore the cicadas in the background. So when the neighbors came upon this, they were all in shock, obviously, as they should. The Hinterkaifeck farm looked very alive, except for its residents. The animals were well fed, they were taken care of, and prior to the search party, neighbors witnessed smoke coming out of the chimney several times. So whoever did this stayed at the home while ignoring the bodies. So kind of stepping back to the coverings and kind of realizing that, oh, somebody is living here, even though everybody is dead, maybe this person covered the bodies because they didn't want to see what they had done repeatedly, or trying to cover up, I don't know, I don't think it would cover up the smell, because the smell of decay, I've heard, is pretty brutal, and you just can't cover that up by covering them in hay or fabric. And maybe it was to, because back in April, in this location in Germany, there was still snow, so maybe, I don't know this process or the thinking behind this criminal or criminals. We don't even know if it's been one or two people. But because there was only one set of footprints in the snow, maybe it was only one. Food for thought. So it's just very weird that this person continued to live here and take care of the farm animals, and also just find and make space to live here. Now, here comes my graphic warning part. I am going to go over the autopsy reports of the family. This does include some graphic descriptions and graphic content, so if you're not a fan of that, skip ahead. I'm not offended. And if you are interested, well, keep listening, because I'm going to tell you. Dr. Johann Baptist Müller performed the autopsies on this family, and this is what he found. So Grandma Cecilia took 7 blows to her head, which ended up cracking her skull. She also showed signs of strangulation. Grandpa Andreas, his face was covered in blood and his skin was shredded, so his cheekbones protruded from his face. Similar to her mother, Victoria's skull was also smashed. She had, quote unquote, star-shaped wounds, and they were found 9 times on her. I believe it was like on her head as well. And on the right side of Victoria's face, she was hit by a blunt object. The younger Cecilia had a shattered jaw and circular gaping wounds found on her face and neck. Maria, the maid, was killed by experiencing crosswise blows to her head, meaning that the blows on her head resembled a cross-like shape. Josef also got hit by a heavy blow to his face. Many think that the weapon used in this battle was a mattock, which is similar to a pickaxe, but it was used for digging and for chopping things, which the mattock is found on the family farm. When police came to the crime scene, they thought the crimes were committed by already suspected criminals or travelers with ill intentions, but upon further inspection, the family's valuables were still found within the house. If they didn't want the money, why did the family at the Hinterkaifeck farm die? Who did this? And also kind of tracking back to the autopsy reports, on the reports, it shares that everybody except the younger Cecilia died immediately and rather quickly. Cecilia showed some signs of shock and some trauma. She also began pulling chunks of hair of her own hair out too, because of how much pain and the trauma and the shock that she was in, which is really heartbreaking. But now we're gonna take a little break and we'll talk after. And welcome back from the break, and now let's look at some leads, some of the theories that I was previously hinting at. Because this crime happened in a small town, and because it was 1922, any man who had some connection to the family became a suspect. Crimes to this extent were unheard of, but the possibility of it being a woman? In 1922, it was impossible to think of a woman committing these heinous crimes in this small community. Recall back to us talking about Lorenz Schlittenberg, the neighbor who led the search party. Remember him? He is thought to be the father of young Josef, but it is not confirmed. It is confirmed, however, that Victoria and Lorenz were in a relationship and both called Josef theirs. The word marriage eventually became a plan for Victoria and Lorenz, but the plan was shut down by Andreas, Victoria's father. So, because Andreas didn't approve, Victoria and Lorenz had to break up. And so when Lorenz moved on, he met and fell in love with another woman, and they were able to get married. But after having their first child together, the baby died a few weeks later. Police locked their eyes in on Lorenz, enough so that theories began coming. It was believed by police that Lorenz grew to be angry and traumatized that the baby he had with his wife died, while his, quote, supposed, unquote, child with Victoria lived. His anger grew to be very dangerous and ventured to his neighbors at the Hinterkaifeck farms and murdered the family. To me, this theory sounds pretty reasonable. Lorenz had a connection with this family and the bodies were covered. But it's just weird to me that he would live at the farm, take care of the animals, a fire in their chimney, and everything when he lived with his wife pretty close to this house. I don't know. Like, I didn't find any reports from his wife making any connection or being like, yeah, my husband wasn't there. No, there are no records. There are no records to say any of that stuff. But it's a pretty reasonable theory. He knew his way around the farm. He had a relationship with the family, and so that would cause him to feel remorseful for killing all of them. But then it's also like, bro, why did you kill them, period? You know? Like, no. No reason explains why you should ever kill somebody. Don't kill people. Thank you. And so those who stayed by Lorenz's side during the whole search party, they did notice that his behavior was beginning to turn suspicious. Lorenz knew his way around the farm. He acted very detached or very casual in a not-so-casual situation. And he also didn't seem to be repulsed by these dead bodies and the gruesome manner of which they were found in. So, of course, Lorenz was questioned. However, police were unable to conclusively place him at the crime scene. And for the behavior, police said that it could all be reasoned by shock. And, you know, he knew his place around because he had a relationship with Victoria. And, you know, that's where she lived. That's probably where they hung out a lot of the times when they were together or whatnot. After Lorenz was let off the hook, some believed that it was Victoria's deceased husband, Carl Gabriel, who committed these horrendous acts. Police introduced the thought that he faked his death because some say that his body was never really recovered from the World War, from the First World War when he was fighting in France. But luckily, this theory was thrown away rather quickly because of Carl's friends and fellow soldiers who confirmed that they saw Carl's body at war and he was no longer alive. Next, we are going to discuss the other man who is thought to be Josef's father, Andreas. Yes, I read and I said that right. You guys heard me right. Andreas. Andreas Gruber, the grandpa. The next town over frequently talked about Andreas and his habits that involved incest and abuse. Apparently, Andreas and his wife, Cecilia, had other children, according to some sources. But Victoria was the only one who managed to survive her awful father and what he did to her. This information introduced a theory that this was a murder-suicide case. Maybe, Andreas just couldn't take the idea anymore that somebody else, you know, or just all of that random crap, even though it's disgusting. Bro, don't fool around with your children or your parents. Just, you know, don't make it Alabama. And this theory was not supported because the injuries of the bodies, they could not have been self-inflicted. The autopsy reports and just everything, they showed no signs of self-infliction, so it could not have been a murder-suicide case. But the incest, that was still up in the air. Nobody really talked about it or questioned it. I don't know if that actually happened. A lot of cases are like, yeah, it did. Other articles don't really mention it, so it's up in the air. The police had no other leads, but plenty more questions, such as, who else knew their way around the farm? Who is it that knows how to use a mattock tool? You know, farmers. So somebody who has experience on a farm. But why would they come to this farm and do what they did? And simply, why? These questions remain. The case was closed. But over these 100 years, the case has been reopened several times, even though the farm was inevitably torn up in 1923, a year after the incident. And the bodies are buried without their heads. Which, you know, you guys are probably like, what, Meredith, you didn't mention anything about their heads being cut off? Well, because it wasn't the perpetrator who did it. It was scientists. Scientists wanted to search for metaphysical clues in the skulls of the Gruber family, and this was relatively, like, soon after this case happened, and it was before World War II started, so the science and technological advancements, they have not made their way to where they are now, basically, is what I'm trying to say. Sadly, the scientists found nothing in their search. They found no clues in the metaphysical aspects of what they were trying to look for. They found nothing. And the skulls were intended to be put back, but were sadly lost and never to be found again because of what happened in World War II. The original evidence gathered at the crime scene has either been lost over time or is too old to give any answers, which I find kind of weird because science has come such a long way and, like, what do you mean it's too old? What do you mean? Like, what kinds of evidence have an expiration date? I looked it up and evidence, okay, this is gonna be like a weird kind of gross analogy, but stay with me here. Evidence is similar to food in the aspects and the matter that it needs to be stored properly and it does have a shelf life, which is odd, I know, but it also makes sense because some evidence is like DNA, bodily fluids, other things. But if it was like physical evidence, like, oh, if it was a gunshot wound or, well, not a gunshot wound, sorry, I'm tired, I haven't had my nap today. If it was like a bullet, that's what I'm trying to say, or a knife, just any kind of weapon, and it wasn't these bodily fluids and everything, then that would have changed the narrative. But to finish off this case in this episode, the Fürstenfeld Bruck Police Academy took on this cold case in the year of 2007. Their answer or theory of who did it is known, but not known to the public. they tried their best. They used what resources they could, but because of, you know, the evidence being old and the different techniques that the original investigators used on the crime scene, and because the crime scene was torn up, this police academy, they didn't have all of the materials that they needed to get conclusive evidence, but they have a theory of who did it. But they want to respect the living family members who have grieved, but also have probably moved on from this tragedy, and being like, oh, we know who did it after 100 years. That would be difficult to kind of rip off that band-aid again. But it's also hard to know, like, we have the answers, but we also don't, because it's not released to the public. I don't know. I like having answers, but I'll respect it. So, as of July of 2022, this theory is still a secret. That's this case. That's the story. Wow. You know, I wonder who did it. My gut just tells me it's Lorenz, but granted, I don't know who all the police interviewed. I don't know the total number of suspects, because on all the articles I read, it's just mentioned these three suspects: Lorenz, Carl, who was dead at the time of this happening, and Andreas. But out of those three, Lorenz seems the most likely. I just don't know. But that's my bet. I wonder what you guys are thinking. What are y'all thinking? Let me know. I'll post about this on our Instagram and Facebook page. Please check us out there at Secondary Accounts. You'll see it. Yeah, if you guys like spooky things, and if you guys want a kind of funny story this week about my failed honeymoon, then keep listening. And be on the lookout for that, because it's a story. And I don't know, telling stories is fun. Yeah, I really appreciate you guys. Yeah, I guess just keep doing what you're doing. Let me know what cases you guys want to hear, because I love learning about these cases that I've never heard about. I'm trying to avoid the more popular cases, but granted, I'll go over them eventually, just not as soon as probably some of you are wanting, but also kind of learning more about these cases that aren't on the mainstream media is just really I hate using the word entertaining to describe crime, but you guys know what I mean. I hope you know what I mean. But literally just these cases, it's like, what? Somebody got away with this? And I don't know if the snow was still there when everybody came and sought for them or what, because we don't know who did this. And maybe they were out in hiding, but obviously at this point of time they are passed on, and I hope that they get punished for what they did. And action will come. I believe that whatever we choose, either in this life, the previous life, or the next life, we will all be held accountable for it. Yeah, so just make smart decisions. Don't kill people. Easy, right? Easy for me. I don't know about some of you. But this case was just... my mom sent me this case, so credit to you, Mom. Thank you so much for sending me this case. Shout out to you. I love you. I miss you. See you next Sunday. Cases are interesting to look up, and I hope the beginning kind of like was spooky enough, but also enticing enough to be like, ooh, what's gonna happen in this story today? Because I like being spooky. You guys know me. I'll see you guys later this week, and also next week. Have a good time. Bye.